Welcome to Unearthing Paranormalcy, the podcast where we dig into the paranormal and find normalcy in the topic. I'm Amy.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Chad.
And we're coming at you today with part two of Past Lives. Now, before we get started, I'm going to tell you guys that I have found my rabbit hole, and I like it very much, and I'm now absorbed and sucked into this past life thing, and I read a whole other book about it, and I have a lot more to talk about.
That's good. I tried to re-listen to the book again, the same book, and once it gets to the scientific mumbo-jumbo, I'm completely lost.
Well, not only did I read a whole other book, I actually found somebody who does past life regression hypnotherapy, talked to her, and I started my own at home past life hypnotherapy last night. I'm like sucked into this thing.
I'm not quite sucked in yet. I do like this topic though. It has been pretty interesting.
Man, I just keep thinking of things that our kids have said. I think of things that I remember from my childhood, things that you've done, and it just kind of like, I'm like, oh man, now I want to know what my past life really was, because I've got all these theories, but I don't know. I am going to go ahead and say that I have a cough drop in my mouth so that I don't cough throughout the podcast, but you might hear it click on my teeth occasionally. I'm going to try not to, but.
So what did your books talk about?
Well, the book that I, the new book I read is called Children's Past Lives, How Past Life Memories Affect Your Child. And it's written by Carol Bowman, which we talked about last episode. Carol Bowman mentions, again, Ian Stevenson, Brian Weiss. There's a few new ones that get thrown in here. This book is more of a how-to, like how to spot it with your children, how to determine whether or not it's a past life versus fantasy. Because anybody who's been around kids knows kids make up some interesting stories, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Vivid imagination.
Yeah. And this kind of gives you pinpoints on how to tell the difference between it being a fantasy story versus being a real story.
It's the emotional connection, isn't it?
That is one of them. There's the emotional connection to it, and then there's repeating the same facts over and over again. Normally, when a kid tells a story, they're going to kind of veer off. You know, they might throw a unicorn in at one time, and the next time is a dragon.
Yeah.
Whereas in these stories, it stays very true to historical fact, things like that.
That's just human nature. I mean, how many times have you heard, I caught the fish and it was this big, and the next time it's 10 feet bigger than that?
Yeah.
Jim Tucker talks about how the emotional connection is what really draws him into some of these cases, and that's what really makes him enjoy doing those research on those cases. He says the ones where the kids have show no emotion towards their past lives are the ones that he kind of believes are kind of fake.
One thing that this book, she explained really well to me, was the fact that Ian Stevenson and Jim Tucker, they are scientists. They are trying to scientifically prove that this works. She is a hypnotherapist counselor. She doesn't care how it works or if it's even factual. She cares that it actually helps people. So, whereas in the books that were done by Stevenson and Tucker and my guy, Schroeder, it was based more on finding the facts. So you get told the story and then you go and you look up the information on that story to verify whether or not that happened. Whereas in this book, there's very little verification of anything. In this book, it's all about how it helped the children with phobias, how it's helped people with anxiety and things of that nature. But less into the facts, just more into how it actually helps. More of a psychological counseling session of it.
Okay.
It's almost also like a Buddhist approach.
Yes. So another thing that is very common in children who are telling a past life story versus a fantasy story is children who are telling a past life story, they're very direct and to the point. They may use words that they wouldn't otherwise use, something that you just don't hear a two-year-old saying.
Yeah, that was a lot of what Jim Tucker said in a bunch of his cases, where that they'd even speak a different dialect or a whole different language.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, they would just know words and information that, yeah, no 3 or 4 year old would have any clue about. So,
now I'll say one thing. This thing throws off and messes with my belief in spirit communication. Because a lot of the things that they talk about being past life regressions or past life memories are things that people experience that I also would consider psychic experiences. And one thing Carol Bowman talks about a lot is she thinks there's a big telepathic communication between people. Yeah. So kind of like a collective, like subconscious, where she was noticing with parents and children, if the parent became open to the idea of past lives, then their children soon after would have some kind of past life regression. Now, I don't know if it's a psychological thing where the path is open between the parent and the child, because there's definitely a psychological connection between mother and child. I mean that exists between parents and children in general. So I don't know if it's that or if it's just because the parents are now looking for the signs and so they're picking them up.
Yeah. Well, I know there was one article I read just the other night. I can't remember the guy's name, but his kind of theory on past lives were more of that your conscience, the energy of a human is your consciousness, really. So when your body dies, that energy has to go someplace else. And his isn't that you're living a past life, it's that energy with children, because they're not completely developed mentally, that the consciousness are able to kind of work their way into that body. And that's what gives him these memories. So like that, it's just the conscious just trying to find another host, kind of like Skinwalkers.
Well, I think I talked about that movie and that book in the last episode.
Yeah,
with the hosts. But, it's aliens.
The guy, because pretty much saying is like when your body dies, the energy your body releases is actually your consciousness leaving the body, and that he was kind of a believer in that when the child's born, that they're not mentally developed, so the consciousness is able to kind of work its way into the body, and that's why they get those memories. He didn't believe that they were actually past lives that you lived before. It was more of just a energy, and could just be the energy in that room at the time.
Well, and I could see that too, and then because that was another thing I questioned a lot when reading these books. Is this a past life, or is this a psychic connection? Is the child picking up something from a spirit in the house? I mean, like I said, it's played with my whole belief system a little bit, diving into this stuff. I think both are possible.
Yeah.
I believe that past lives are possible. I believe in past lives. I believe in reincarnation and transmigration. So transmigration would be living lives as other species. So I could have been a dog. I could have been a tree, you know.
Yeah. Jim Tucker talks about those in his book, and he's not much of a believer in being able to cross species past lives. He's not saying it's not real. He just finds it hard for a conscience of a snake to inhabit a conscience of a human and have the memories of being a snake. And it's actually one of the stories in his book.
And Carol Bowman talks about that, too, because she talks about Ian Stevenson's beliefs in it. And Ian Stevenson also, he was kind of like Jim Tucker in the fact that he wasn't big on the transmigration. He actually noticed that most people reincarnate within a couple hundred miles of the location that they lived. And it's not uncommon to reincarnate into the same families over and over again. My belief is that we have our tight-knit of souls and people that we know, but we reincarnate to learn lessons. And so if you come back and you just learn and live the same life over and over, it can be harder to learn the lessons. So you choose different people, and then you trans families and all that. But I don't doubt that there are people who are just really close. And this book talks about it, and I also have felt this before. You meet somebody new for the first time, and you have either that instant connection to them.
You feel like you've known them your entire life kind of thing.
Like, we're going to be best friends. I just know this is going to happen. Or, you know, love at first sight. Or
I said the soulmate connection that people tend to share or think they share could very easily be your soul from a past life is finding the connection in someone else's soul that they knew in a past life. And that's actually what the soul connection is, not love, but...
Exactly. Or the exact opposite has happened, too, when you meet somebody and you just don't like them.
Happens to me all the time.
There are some people that I have met that, like, there's people I haven't even met before that I just don't like. We're going to go celebrity here. Nicolas Cage. Never met Nicolas Cage. Love Nicolas Cage's movies. Him? I don't like him.
I think the older you get, the less tolerant you get of people, though.
True. Although, I mean, I haven't liked Nicolas Cage for quite some time.
I mean, I'm that way, though. There are people I'll see walking down the street, and instantly I'm like, I don't like him. Don't know what it is. I'm guessing it's the way he's dressed or something. I don't know. But, I mean, I'm an introvert, but I'm an extrovert as well. I'm kind of in the between, and I'm out with a bunch of people. I'm a nerd, so I play Magic, so I'm always at the card shops and stuff. So I'm around a bunch of just random people.
Nerd alert.
Yeah. And I'll be there and someone will walk in and don't even have to say anything to them. I just instantly dislike them. But then there's a few people I've met there that as soon as they come in, it's like an old lost friend that you just see like, hey, what's up, man? Like, so.
Well, and I've also met people that I instantly like, but other people around me don't like them. And then I feel immediately protective of them.
Yeah.
Kind of like a mama bear, I guess, instinct, where it's like I automatically want to protect them. And then there's other times that people introduce me to people and I just don't like them. So I don't know. But another theory would be if you've got hobbies. If you're just like a protege at something without ever having done it. Like there was one little boy in here that they were talking about that was a magnificent artist. And he was like 5. He never had any kind of artist training, which is a natural prodigy. And he remembered past life of being an artist.
Well, there's a story in, I believe it was Jim Tucker's book, of someone who remembers being the author of the play of Gone with the Wind. He remembered the death, remembered writing the play, remembered the family. And his family said that he would write stories from the age of 3. Like, couldn't even really write yet, but... You could kind of make out what he was trying to put down, and he was actually writing plays at the age of 3 or 4.
That's crazy.
That's really cool.
That's awesome.
And then after the after the regressions kind of passed, as he got older, the writing quit. But
I have to say, I really, really wish that I could have had some super power when I was born, not magical, but being able to play the piano or be able. I don't focus on anything long enough. I can't focus on anything long enough to master it. I like to refer to myself as a jack of all trades, but a master of none. I can do a lot of different things.
That's kind of how I am.
But I'm not great at anything.
I'm very easily brought into something new. Someone shows me something within a week, I can do it. Not great, but I can do it. And then after a month, I'm average at it. Or a couple months, I'm average at it. But I go through new hobbies like clockwork. after every few months, I'm back into something.
I probably have about 6 pounds of yarn back there in my bedroom from when I was big into crocheting. I still like to crochet. I just don't do it like I used to.
I've been into sports, card games, music, back into, I can kind of cycle through them. But then, something will pop up that someone introduces me to, and I'm like all of a sudden drawn to it for at least a couple months.
I don't know. Maybe we've just done a whole lot of different things in our past life. Because Dave's the same way. Dave has lots of little hobbies that he does. And he'll focus more on one for a little while. And then that one kind of tapers off and he picks up another. But he always goes back to all of them. Cycles back through them again.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those you got to keep your mind challenged, I guess would be the way to say it. If you do the same thing over and over, you get bored. Your mind doesn't focus on it anymore. So you change it up. Reteach yourself something, and then change it up again. I think that's kind of what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those are kind of the things that Carol Bowman talked about for children. She also went into what to do if your child is having a past life, if you believe your child is having a past life regression. Actually, one of the things she said is just stay calm. Stay calm, read some books, figure it out. Don't say, oh, well, that never actually happened, or things like that, because... I started thinking, Kylie used to say that she would say that her papa was her dad. Remember that?
Yeah.
Used to say that all the time. No, he was my dad. No, he was my dad. Well, as far as I know, dad never had any other children. But that doesn't mean that in another lifetime, he wasn't her dad.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, it just got me thinking about that. And she asked about her papa all the time. So, I don't know. Could be.
So that's one of those things as parents, me not being a parent, I can't really say a whole much on it, but it's you don't want to force your kid into it. If they're having a past life regression, so the more you pry and try to get into them, the less they're going to be upcoming about it or forthcoming.
That's another thing she says. Stories. She says, let them tell you. Now, you can kind of direct them, but you don't force them to give you information.
It's like any kids, if you pry on something, they're just going to tell you what to hear. They're going to make up a story that fits along with what you're wanting.
That's yeah, exactly. Carol was talking about they went to Oprah. Her and her family were on Oprah. And they wanted to get some dates and some names from her children because her children had past life regressions. And she's like, well, it'd be more believable if it wasn't their mother doing the regression. So they called in another psychologist to do the regressions. And he was like forcing it out of them. Do you remember your name? Come on. Can you remember a name? Just give me a name. That's all I need is a name. And then both kids just made up names. They told their mom later, like, we don't know for sure if that was real or if we just made that up.
Yeah. That's one of those things that, I mean, I've done coaching and stuff like that with kids. And the more you pry them to do something, the more they're just going to tell you something that you want to hear. So I would see in past life regressions that this would be something that you have to let them do on their own time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think to like forced confessions, things like that, to where you can make, especially children or low IQ adults, say things by just kind of badgering them.
You mean police tactics?
Yeah,
like with the Reed technique.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, making a murder is one, and then the West Memphis Three.
It happens all the time. So.
Yeah,
there was a case of a daycare in the 90s during the Satanic Panic eras.
Yeah,
where they got these children to say that they were summoning the devil and stuff to come in and burn their feet or all kinds of off the wall stuff.
Or they took them on airplanes and took them to other places and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Flew them to like other countries during like the 6 hour span that they were at daycare.
I wish our possible. Daycare would have done that. I mean, I walked into the daycare with our kids the other day and I smelt tuna fish casserole and it just took me back to.
See, something in me thought you were going to say you walked in and started smelling marijuana. And I was like, that's the kind of daycare I want to go to because then it make you feel like you're on a plane going to new places.
That would be the kind of daycare,
it's just
yeah.
The kids are stoned.
No. No, it just smelled like tuna fish casserole and it just took me back to daycare and made me gag. So there was another, like I said, that she talked about a bunch of different doctors and psychologists that in this book. And Dr. Wambach is one that she referenced a lot. And Dr. Wambach did a lot of analysis with data and numbers and surveys and all that stuff. And she did a questionnaire. In the end, she had 1,088 questionnaires. She expected to toss 10 to 20% that would, for inaccuracies. Of all of those, 70% of them remembered past lives. I thought that was kind of high.
Yeah, that does seem kind of like a high number for.
But then again, I mean, just because I don't have those memories doesn't mean somebody else doesn't. I mean, like you, I am convinced that you had them from when you were a child.
No memory of them now.
Mom and I used to talk about it all the time. Like, that's what Chad did in his last life. That was Chad in his past life. Because you would always just point at football players and say, that was me. Between male and female, it's about an even split. Not many people actually remember being super rich.
Well, Jim Tucker talks about that and about how there's not a whole lot of famous past life. Our children don't remember past lives of being famous. And he said, but you got to look at it as the fact that at the population of the world being, 7 billion or whatever it is, only about 15% of people on the earth are famous.
Yeah.
So all these past lives, you're looking at maybe 15% of all past lives are famous people. That's why you don't see them or hear of them much.
Yeah.
And because they're famous, it's very easy for the parents to go, oh, he's just saying something he saw on TV.
Well,
or he got that from a movie. They're not looking into it really. So.
Well, and Ian Stevenson would throw him out.
Yeah.
He would throw out a lot of cases. Like, he had that one where it was JFK. I mean, they're just less believable because there's more information out there. When you're trying to scientifically prove it, it's if it's more a mundane, everyday life.
Well, and it's also how easy would it be for the parents that force the kid to, or tell the kid they remember the stories of a famous person, trying to hopefully, you know, get some money out of it or something.
Yeah, that's so true.
A lot of the stories that are in this book talk about Holocaust survivors. That is something in common that I saw a lot in this book. Holocaust survivors and African-American slaves is something that gets brought up a lot in this book. I don't know.
No, Holocaust survivors?
Or no, they didn't survive. That's why they
how could they be past lives if they were still alive?
Then there were two in particular that they described their death in the gas chamber.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
There were a few stories in this book that kind of made me a little teary-eyed. Because a lot of them, too, is about children. So there's a lot of them that you just, those poor children are remembering these deaths. But one thing every single one of the children say is death is not scary. And death actually feels good.
Well, no, in Jim Tucker's, a couple of his cases, they said that you want to go to, like, there's a bright light, and you want to go to the bright light.
Yeah.
Like, you're drawn to it.
A lot of the cases report it being a very freeing feeling when you're out of your body. 62% of the cases that she studied, the causes of death were natural causes or old age. 18% were violent deaths by murder, suicide, or attacks of animals. And then some of the deaths were unknown. Now, they did say that of those, what it is it tends to be those who have spontaneous past life memories, the ones that just remember it without hypnotherapy, they have a higher percentage of being trauma or unexpected deaths.
Yeah. Well, see, that's weird because Jim Tucker's cases, they've done over 2,500 cases or something like that. And his stats are like completely different, backwards. Like his 70% of their cases were all untimely deaths when only 30% were old age or natural causes.
Yeah.
And then of those 70%, another 70% of that is, he said, were mostly males and 30% were female. And he believed the reason the 70% of the untimely deaths were males was because males are idiots and don't tend to think about things very well and kind of the hold my beer, watch this kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought of. I thought of the picture that I saw going around on, I think, Facebook with the guy on the ladder, like balanced on top of the table underneath the...
Like, underneath another ladder.
Yeah.
Yeah. People aren't, or guys aren't very.
Yeah. Basically,
smart.
They made scaffolding out of two ladders and a table and then another ladder on top of that because.
Because yeah. Engineering.
My beer.
But, so that's kind of weird. Kind of interesting how her numbers are different than.
But
his,
her numbers are based off of hypnotherapy.
Okay.
So hers are all based off of hypnotherapy, but they did discover that those who do have the spontaneous memories, it just randomly remember things, it is tied more to untimely deaths. And Carol Bowman's theory on that is that the trauma shocks the soul to the point that they don't even have time to wait. Because one thing that they talk a lot about is what happens to the soul after you die. Apparently children's souls come back faster. I don't know why, but she does talk about that. But you have the choice. You can either come back or you can sit in heaven and watch.
Yeah, that's kind of how Jim Tucker talks about it from the cases he has. A lot of the kids, a lot of the kids say, you know, you get to choose whether or not you come back. You don't have to. But then some of his cases say, you know, you have to come back. And some of them were almost instantaneous, almost like time travel, to where they would die, and the next thing they remember is being born being born to a new body. But there being like a 20-30 year gap. This is like as soon as they died, like they close their eyes, they go to the bright light. As they go through the bright light, they're coming out the birth canal pretty much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of interesting how a bunch of different stories, but how they could yet either be almost instantaneous, but within different years. And that's kind of interesting to me. But.
Now, one thing that this book talks about, as well as the hypnotherapist that I talked to, it tends to be that a lot of things just continue life after life. So, like, if you have issues with your mother in a past life, you're going to have issues with your mother in this life. And so on and so forth until you're able to correct it in your past life. So, correct it with and get over it, basically. So you're able to deal with it from your past life in order to avoid it in this life.
Well, the boy Ryan from actually Muskogee, Oklahoma, in Jim's book, the reason he said he came back was because he wanted to redo everything because he was more about the money and the fame of being a Hollywood actor than he was about his family and his children, about love. So he said he had to come back to learn how to love again, and that was his reason of coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, this talked about actually it was Carol herself, was extremely ill, like dying type of ill, and she just kind of had a spontaneous past life regression and saw that in a past life that she had had the same kind of ailment, and it was a respiratory thing, and then she even went to another life and she had the same thing. So she realized that it was like a reoccurrence of this same thing. And so she eventually went back to wherever it was that caused it.
So smoking.
And corrected it then. And then she got better, was 100% better, and hadn't had that problem since. So she was talking about how it can change your life and your predetermined plan, I guess, for your life. To go back and do the hypnotherapy stuff.
So the new Surgeon General's warning should say that smoking causes you to also smoke in your next life?
Probably. You know? It very well could be. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, screw that bastard who was my past life and the life before him.
I mean, I smoked for a long time.
I think mine
was more of a hereditary thing. I think it was more of that psychological factor that it took me back to my childhood. Because the smell, I still love the smell of cigarettes. I had one the other day that made me gag, but I love the smell of them. And I think it's because it takes me back to my childhood. Because my dad smoked my entire life. So, and it did eventually kill him. He died of emphysema, and he had emphysema, and then he got pneumonia, and he died. So,
and that was the night I picked up smoking for the first
time. It will kill you. That was one of the first times that I quit. That was when I found out I was pregnant with our daughter. Then I started again. But I haven't started back up since I quit last time. So, doing good. So, Dave, you have a list over there of things that for us to look for to see if we have experienced past lives.
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of like a list of symptoms that you might have had a past life.
So it's like the WebMD of whether or not you had past lives.
I had a past life. No.
Now, I did make little notes on it with the stories you were talking about on the last podcast we did on this.
Yeah.
And 7 of them fit stories y'all had already talked about.
Really?
Yeah. Things like deja vu.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to deja vu in the sense that you go to a place you've never been and you feel like you've been there before. Or whenever you hear like a song or somebody's voice and you get these feelings from it, like it's not something new.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like when I, that house that we went into that we talked about in the, I don't know if it was personal stories or what, but it was the house that Mom lived in with the long hallway.
Yeah.
I had felt like I'd been in that house before. And in fact, I've been in a house here recently that kind of, I had that same feeling. Like, I've been here before.
Yeah.
So.
I don't think I've ever really had that feeling, at least. I mean, I have deja vu, like, weekly.
Oh, yeah, I have it all the time.
And it's not, like, just a small second. Like, I remember, like, 10-minute conversations.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever been someplace, oh, I've been here before.
Are you a time traveler?
Time crimes.
I tell you what puzzles me is the time in my life where I had the most amount of deja vu when I was away at war.
Yeah. There's a lot of energy there at a war. I mean, past, present, especially we're in like Iraq. Iraq is like got all kinds of turmoil for many years. The whole Middle East does. So I could see that definitely, especially if it's a psychological thing, not a psychological thing, a energy thing and a telepathy type situation.
Yeah.
How that could be. I remember It's the summer before sixth grade, and I had gone to band camp.
Nerd alert.
And I had severe separation anxiety for mom for a long time.
And double nerd alert.
Yeah, I know. I was a mama's girl. But anyway, she dropped me off for this band camp. And I remember sitting in the room, but it was like I'd been there before. I'd experienced all of this before. I knew exactly what was going to happen. I knew what was going to be said. I mean, down to like the T. And then I started getting cold and like clammy and sweaty and like freaking out. And then I was like, I want my mom. And then, yeah. But I remember that. That was like a very vivid deja vu. And then also the jet ski accident that I had. I had a jet ski accident when I was 11. Actually, on my 11th birthday. But I had multiple surgeries. And for probably 2 or 3 months before my second surgery, I kept having this dream of being on the operating table. And I had a teddy bear that I got while I was in the hospital the first time with me for the surgery, like laying on the table with me. And I like in the dream, the nurse holds the mask over my head and I'm freaking out. And she said, this is better than a needle. And then I go to sleep. Well, then I go and I have my second surgery and they allowed me to take my teddy bear in there that I had gotten. And they put a little cap on it and, you know, got it prepped for surgery too. And I developed a major fear of needles from the first hospital stay and first surgeries. And so they were going to knock me out before they gave me an IV. And I put the gas on. And if you've ever been knocked out by the gas, there's this moment right before you just go that it's kind of a panic because you can feel your body slipping. Like you feel your conscious slipping. And they had me holding the mask on. They're like, here, hold this on while we're doing all this stuff. And I freaked out and I pulled the mask off. And then the nurse came over and she put the mask on my face and she said, this is better than a needle. And down to squeezing the teddy bear's hand and falling asleep exactly as the dream was that I had reoccur for months. And that was a really weird thing for me. You guys are both looking at me like you're crazy.
Because you are.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Amy.
I don't know, it's like a deja vu thing, right? I mean...
Yeah. Also, dreams and nightmares is on that list.
Well, see, there we go. It fits both criteria. I actually think I'm more just a time traveler like Chad. Yeah, I have...
Well, most of the deja vu I have in... I remember it in dreams weeks before, and then the event happens. So I can see the future.
Yeah.
But it's always really boring stuff, like family conversations and arguments with friends. Nothing cool. I want to, you know, stop an accident or something.
You want to be like a superhero?
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Or like Sam Winchester.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I have reoccurring dreams every once in a while. I don't have them as much as I did when I was a child. Yeah. I had a lot when I was a kid.
Well, I think this is more referring to dreams and nightmares of other people's lives. Kind of like with that kid that kept having that dream of he was shot down in his airplane.
Yeah.
And it was on fire and he couldn't get out.
Well, I had a reoccurring dream of aliens attacking my school for a long time. And that wasn't in my life. I could have been.
Ooh, that could have been.
That
could have been a past life.
That's right. I had a dream I was the serial killer in a movie once, so. Well, I don't know if it was a movie. I just remember being the serial killer, so.
I remember being shot by the DC sniper who was hanging out in Norman, Oklahoma.
I've been having these crazy dreams lately where I'm cutting up bodies.
Well, me and Dave are crazy. Yeah. And we're probably going to become serial killers.
Very vivid, too.
Help. Help.
Maybe. I'm pretty sure mine was because I was playing Dead by Daylight for a few days in a row. Well, not consistently, but... You know, a couple hours here and there each day. So I'm pretty sure that's where my dream came from. Yours, on the other hand.
I think his comes from taking sinus medication for the past few days.
Possibly.
Yes, we've both been pretty sick.
I've been having these dreams for weeks.
Yeah. Well, there was one time you had a dream that you can't. I mean, you even came in and you looked at me and you were like, "We got to go get your car." And I said, "Why?" And you said,
No. I remember it now.
Yeah.
I said, "We got to report your car stolen."
That's what it was. I was like, why?
And I was like, because we put the body of that cop in the trunk and pushed it into the lake is why.
And I was like, what are you talking about?
Don't tell me you're going to fuck me on the plane.
You probably shouldn't have said that on the podcast. Because now if they find a car in the lake.
it was the oddest thing because he was just like, oh, was this a dream? And I was like, I think so, because my car is out in the garage. And
did you go check your trunk?
I didn't check the trunk, but and then there was one time you woke up and he said, did you see that plane crash? And I said, no. He's like, a plane crash right behind the house. Did you call the 911? And I looked out the door. I'm like, where did a plane crash? Oh, that must have been a dream too.
So Dave is having the past life regressions of a killer and the pilot, the plane one, I don't know. But
I dream of planes crashing all the time.
The chopping up bodies and killing a cop and putting it in your trunk. Yeah, either you're watching way too many horror movies or you're having past lives from a serial killer.
Possibly.
I'm going to
hop. H.H. Holmes much?
I have very, very vivid dreams.
I'm actually going to hop in here real fast. Okay, because I was doing that past life hypnotherapy thing last night. And it was like, think of something, you know, what is something that you want to solve? And I was like trying to think of my biggest fear. I've got like little phobias that make sense. You know, fear of the dark. I can handle being in the dark. And there's nothing that just like paralyzes me. And then I started thinking, no, there is the fear of other people in heights. And it, I mean, we took the kids to a science museum over the weekend, and just my daughter standing close to the rail on the second story freaked me out. And like, I couldn't look at her. And I, we've got a theater here that has balcony seating. I refuse to sit on the front row because it makes me too nervous to watch the people walk in front of me.
That's a great segue into my next one. Fears and phobias.
See? Okay, there we go. See?
Especially unexplainable ones.
Yeah.
See, I only have two of those. One of those is porcelain dolls. And I really highly doubt I got killed by a porcelain doll in a past life. But that's the one phobia. Like, I have no idea where it came from.
Maybe you were killed by a porcelain doll maker.
I don't know. But like, since I was, I don't have to say kid, but since I remember.
That probably has a lot to do with like movies.
Well, I think I've never liked those movies. Like, if there's a movie that has to do with the doll, I refuse to go see it. My friends dragged me to go see Annabelle, and luckily enough, the film had messed up, so we didn't have to watch it. So I was able to go home and get away from it.
Maybe in a past life, you collected porcelain dolls. And you died alone as an old maid in a house surrounded by porcelain dolls.
Kind of sounds like what's happening now, minus the porcelain dolls.
You're dying an old maid surrounded by
old person by myself. But then the other one I have is being in a house by in the dark. I have no problem with the dark being outside. I'd prefer to be outside in the dark. But for some reason, in a house, maybe it's because of all the personal ghost stories we have growing up. That might be what's caused it. But I do not like being in a house with all the lights off. Like, in my house, every night, I have either the bathroom or the kitchen light on because it's enough to light up the majority of the house if I wake up in the middle of the night. I cannot stand being in the house in the dark by myself.
Well, see, I've got my fear of other people in heights. I don't know where it came from. I myself can be up high and don't have a problem, but seeing other people up high scares the pants off me. But another thing I'm scared of is planes crashing, and particular planes crashing into the house. And this is pre-9/11. This is back when we were kids. So we're talking early 90s, late 80s for me. I would lay awake at night in bed, and if I heard a plane going over, I would listen to see if it sounds like it was crashing. And I do that now, and it really sucks because we're right in the flight path of Tinker and their big AWACS. So when those things fly over our house, the walls rattle. But I sit and I listen. And I listen to see if it sounds different than normal. Because I'm afraid it's going to crash. And I have nightmares all the time of watching planes crash. And in fact, I had one the other day of watching an AWACS crash. But it wasn't a real AWACS. It wasn't like the AWACSs that they have. It like had the radar disc that's on top of them was like on a wing. And the wing was like bent. See? There's a plane going over us right now. That just sounds like a little jet probably going to Westheimer. But, so those are my two dreams. Like, my two dreams, my big fears. Well, in this past life regression, I was trying to figure out, you know, what caused that. So now I'm wondering if maybe I witnessed the plane crash would make sense for other people in Heights, not being able to save them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just thinking of my fears. What you got next?
The next one I have is affinity for foreign culture.
I don't have that one at all.
Me either.
Yeah, you do, Amy. Egyptian culture.
Oh, I do. I really do like the Egyptian culture.
I guess, yeah, now you say that. Growing up, I was huge into the Greek mythology and Greek culture.
Yeah. I would also say Greek and Roman mythology and Egyptian. Like, but it all kind of goes together because it was all around the same area. I like the polytheistic religions. I like when there's lots of gods, and I like the way that people worship these different gods differently, and that stuff really interests me, and it has for a long time.
I'm sure my enjoyment in the Greek culture and mythology was, since I was a little kid, all I wanted to do was be an archaeologist, so, and Greece, just the photos and the videos and documentaries I've seen of, you know, Greece and the Parthenon and all that stuff, like, really drew me in. So I think that's where my like of another culture came from. But
I've often thought that maybe I was an Egyptian, like an ancient Egyptian.
Yeah. My affinity has always been with the Greeks and the Celtic people.
Yeah. I can't say.
I have a lot of friends who are super into like Japanese culture.
I do too. Yeah, and I can't, friends like that too. I can't stand a lot of it. I mean, it's nothing.
See, I can't say anything. Like we said, nerd alert earlier. I mean, I watch anime, so I always
annoys the shit out of me, and I don't know why. Like, our daughter watches a lot of it, and I'm just like, oh my god, I can't stand this.
Real good anime.
Well, because she's not allowed to. Now, I will say that her Netflix got turned off of kids, and she was watching something, and I walked in there, and I was like, what the. Who is this? You need to change the channel. It was.
Yeah, I would say fairy tales, not quite for kids.
Yeah, I was like, this is not for you. And then I had to explain to her the rating system and why she couldn't watch it. But anime drives me insane. A lot of the Chinese and not so much Japanese. My problem is more with like a Chinese culture. And then there's a little bit of the Japanese culture that I don't like it. And I don't know why. I couldn't tell you why.
Maybe it's from your past life.
Maybe. Maybe I fought in a war against them. I don't know. But I know many Chinese and Japanese people, and I have absolutely no problem with them. I just don't like the culture. And I don't know why. What you got next?
We kind of already talked about this one. It's passions. We kind of talked about that with like all the different hobbies we have, and
yeah, I don't have any big like right now. My passion is the podcast.
Yeah, I don't think that was in a past life because podcasts are fairly recent.
But I could have been a radio jockey.
Could have been.
I don't think I was, but I could have been.
My biggest passion, since you talk about still to this day, is football.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much what I did today. Today's a Sunday, and I literally laid on my couch and watched 7 hours of football straight.
Go
not
Browns.
Counting yesterday and watching OU play. So, I mean, I'm still super drawn into it, but
yeah, I am big into OU football. OU football is my big sports passion, I guess. And Browns. Go Browns.
You say you have a Browns passion. You like them. You don't have a passion.
I have a passion for them now.
You don't watch a single game.
I don't. I only watch my OU football. But
can you even spell fan?
P8. No. But yeah. Yeah, I don't really say that I have like an overall passion. My passion changes a lot. But Dave says I get really passionate about a lot of things.
Yeah, you do.
And when I get passionate, I get loud.
When I get passionate, I become very irritable.
I'm really irritable after OU loses. In fact, Dave will come in and he's like, is your team winning or losing? And
I'll shut up, Dave!
And I'm like, we're losing. He's like, all right, I'll go in the other room for a while.
I get in arguments over my passions quite a bit. But I think that's why I have the friends I have, because at least two of the three, like, of my really close friends are also really into football, so we can have, like, intellectual talks about it, and we don't get as angry. But I'm one of those people, if I'm at a bar and hear someone talking about sports and they don't know a whole lot or about football, I get super pissed. So
I say, you and Austin are my football outlet. I talk to you guys about football because Dave doesn't do football, so I don't have anybody to talk to but you. You're my only football friend. So what's next, or do you have any passions?
Just kind of the ones we've already discussed. Uncontrolled habits.
Eating, smoking.
Popping my joints.
Yes. Shaking my legs.
Yes, and you're doing it right now. It's driving me insane.
So I guess apparently all these little tics we have can be from past lives.
So I must have had all my fingers broken in a past life. Because I'm constantly popping. I can pop the individual joints in my fingers, and I do it constantly.
I think that's just a habit. And I think smoking, like we talked about, I think smoking very well could be something that's past life based.
Everybody, I mean, smoked and drank before 1940.
Yeah. Eating disorders very well could be the same thing. Whether you binge eat or whether you have anorexia.
Comfort eat or...
Yeah, I mean... That very well could be from past lives, and it could just be stress or karma or something from a past life that has to be taken care of.
We'll see. Going by this, I was fat, a football player, had my fingers broken. I lived in a house with porcelain dolls, and it was always dark. That's what I'm going with my past life so far.
So you were an offensive lineman who probably broke your knee and ended up a hermit in an apartment. Were you mail ordered porcelain dolls?
And I couldn't pay the electric bill.
Well, yes, because you spent all of your money on your porcelain dolls. See, I've solved the history of Chad's past lives.
Now I'm just going to go Google that exact description and see who it finds.
It'll pull up somebody, and you'll be like, holy shit. That's me.
What about inexplicable pains?
Always.
I thought that was just old age.
I've called it since I was a kid. I've had a bad back. Like, I've had like a pinched nerve in my back that just never goes away, even after physical therapy and massages and.
In your shoulder.
And my shoulder. Since I was 17, I hurt my shoulder somehow. And since then, going through multiple MRIs, x-rays, physical therapy, the one where they pop your back and chiropractors. I could not think of that name. I've literally heard so many doctors go, you know, I just don't know what's wrong with you.
It's an upper respiratory infection.
Pretty much. My doctors always think I have an upper respiratory infection.
Well, see, that goes along with the football player, though. I mean, if you're talking back injury, shoulder injury, that very easily could be football injuries.
I've had those two major pains since, I was 12 for my back. I think it was 17 for my shoulder. And I still do them to this day. Like, right now, my shoulder's actually killing me, but I'm just used to it, so.
Well, my shoulder hurts, but I'm weed-eated, so that's the answer to that one. Well, in my next life, I bet you I have a bad ankle.
Yeah, very possible.
From the jet ski accident. I mean, we are now a couple decades since the jet ski accident, and it still hurts.
Yeah, I think if you have pain like that over your entire life.
You're still
life,
my weather at Doppler.
The magical weather foot?
Yeah.
If it's pretty
aching,
accurate.
I know it's going to start raining soon.
Yeah, or it's going to get really cold. So if it starts aching in the middle of the summer, we know it's going to rain.
It is Oklahoma, though, so it could get really cold and have a blizzard. Who knows?
Never know.
Now, the next you might experience this. It's birth defects or birth marks.
Very much could.
That was actually, Jim Tucker talked about that a lot. That was actually one of his favorite ones, were the birth marks that coincide with previous lives' injuries.
So. Yeah. And go along with, like, deaths and things like that. Like,
I read about one. I don't know if I got the facts right, but it was a Taiwanese man, and he had a birthmarks of all these, like, dots all over his chest.
Or he was shot with...
And then, yeah, he remembered a life, and they were shot with a shotgun right to the center of the chest.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first story, or first case that Jim talks about in the book is of a kid who had the past life memories of his older half-brother who was deceased and had birthmarks and unexplained bumps and disfigurations in the exact same place that his half-brother who had cancer had growths and surgery marks and all that stuff on. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah. There was lots of cases with head injuries where they'd be born with birthmarks on their head or weird lumps. I know that one of the ones that I read, his past life, he died in a car accident from head trauma. When he was born, he had an oddly shaped head. So much so that the doctors were kind of worried about him. I don't have any birthmarks. I've got moles, but that runs in our family too.
Yeah, I don't have any birthmarks that I know of either. So,
our daughter has one on her back. Like square in the center of her back, like right along her spine. And it's little, like bullet hole size, but I don't know what it is. I mean, our son actually has a little dimple on his chest on his left side, right below his rib cage. He's got a little dimple that looks like a scar, but he's never injured himself there that I know of.
Yeah. So
it'll be interesting once he starts talking.
Yeah.
What he can I'll tell like, us.
This is where I was shot.
I got mugged and stabbed right here.
With an ice pick.
By Tupac.
Our son is Tupac. Holy shit. Or is he Biggie? So I think our consensus is really that I think we all kind of believe that this is all possible.
Yeah, anything's possible.
I have to say, it's one of the topics we've covered so far that, although my skeptic brain was on a lot in the beginning, after the second book that I read, I pretty much lost all of my skeptic ability. Like, I was like, okay, there's a lot of proof here.
Yeah. The way Jim wrote this book is good ways of when he tells you about something, he gives you facts to back it up.
Yeah.
I had heard of past lives. You know, you always hear the joke, I bet you did that in your past life or something like that. That was really hick. I bet you did that in your past life. Something like that. You know, I always hear people say that stuff, but I, you know, thought it was just a saying. But after doing some research on this, it's one of those, I'm still not 100% sure. But it's one of those that actually interests me enough that I will actually do more research into it still and watch YouTube videos or read more books about it or something like that.
Well, one of the biggest things that stops people from actually believing in it is their religious background. And I understand that because, I mean, you're talking about life-changing information on some level.
Well, also, like we've talked about for other paranormal stuff, people don't want to believe it because they don't want other people to think that they're crazy.
Yeah.
And this world we live in, people judge everybody so quickly that people are scared to say, oh, my son's having memories of being this other person. They tell it to the wrong person, then they tell everyone else that this person's crazy. They think their kid's someone else. And then, you know, they get to live in shame for the next few years.
Yeah.
Like... I think that's actually a lot of it. And when it comes to religion, or the people who are religious about it, they're scared of what people at their church are going to think.
Yeah, or even what their community is going to think, because there's a lot of communities that are very religious-based still in America.
Well, and Dave actually found in the Bible where it actually does mention reincarnation. And people always say that it doesn't fit with a Christian background. But Jesus himself talks about it in the Bible.
I think every religion does. In like some aspect. I mean, okay, for the Bible, for people who believe in the Bible to not think reincarnation is possible. Pretty sure Jesus died and came back. Pretty sure that's a big part of the story, right?
Yes.
I mean, yeah. We have Easter and all that because of stuff like that. So how is reincarnation not possible in Christian belief? I'm saying this as someone who was once religious and is no longer religious.
All right, here is actually the part of the Old Testament.
I got it written down if you want me to go into it.
With Matthew 17:10-13?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, in Mark chapter 9, it talks about reincarnation. And also Matthew 17, I actually got it quoted here from the New International Version. It's, the disciples asked him, "Why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first?" Jesus replied, "To be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things. But I tell you, Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize him, but have done to him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands." Then the disciples understood that he was talking to them about John the Baptist.
So basically it says that John the Baptist was Elijah.
Yeah.
So, and then it also...
Sorry, I started getting warm and felt like I was on fire for a second.
Carol Bowman talks a little about Judaism too. And she talks about how the Jewish religion has no single doctrine or dogma, no one book that defines its faith, kind of like Christianity has the Bible. And instead, Jews draw their inspiration from inspiration and spiritual guidance from a number of sacred texts. One of them is the Book of Mystical Teachings, the principal text of the Kabbalah, called Zohar, the Book of Splendor. This book has guided Jewish mystics since at least the 13th century, when it first appeared in Spain. Though some scholars believe it records secret teachings that were handed down since time before Christ, the Book of Splendor traces the cycle of death and rebirth called Gilgal, which means wheel, and transformations. It teaches that each incarnation is unique, with a mission compromising of lessons to be learned and commandments to be fulfilled, and deeds were performed to balance wrongs committed in former lifetimes. In other words, it takes care of unfinished businesses. The ultimate purpose of the Gilgal, I'm probably saying that completely wrong and I apologize, is the purification of the soul, which is also along the lines of Buddhist beliefs, a lot of pagan beliefs in general.
Certain sects of early Christianity also believed in reincarnation.
Yeah.
For quite some time.
So, I mean, it is there in religious doctrine. You just have to be open-minded and find it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little bit more of a hopeful idea to know that if we screw it up too badly, we can just do it again.
Yeah.
And actually, there was a story in Wainwright in that last book by Carol Bowman. Talks about a little girl who came in and caught part of a news story about a man who was sentenced to death row. And she said something along the lines of, "Well, that's not a punishment." And her mom said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "Because death is freeing." And she said something along the lines of how it's actually good for him, though, because he screwed up so badly in this life that he can try it again next time.
Yeah, so not get caught.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of pluses and minuses to, I guess, rebirth as well. But
you can go and get past life therapy.
There's a couple of different ways to do it, too.
I found three different ways. There's the metaphysical approach. When done with a reputable psychic, a past life reading is the best and most accurate way to learn about your past lives. I read that a psychic who has the gift of reading your Akashic records can tell you about your past life. Your Akashic records are records that exist in the higher realms, and they have recorded in them everything about all of your past lifetimes, including this one. These records contain every thought, action, and deed you have ever had or done.
Oh, shit. It's written down.
And they can tell you many things about your past life, such as who you were, what you did, why you have certain fears and phobias, and also your life purpose in this lifetime.
I kind of experienced a mini one of those. We'd gone into a New Age store, or an occult store, and I had inquired about past life readings because I had kind of wanted to have one for a while. And the lady that was there happened to be the one who does them. And she's like, here. And she took my hands. She closed her eyes and she said, I see you in a long flowing dress. You're standing on a balcony. You're young. It's an ancient Greece. People worship you. Almost like a goddess. And then she said, but you died very young, and you've died very young in multiple lives. And then I was like, okay. She wanted me to pay $100 to have a reading done. I wasn't sure how much I believed in it to pay $100 for it. But I think it'd be fun to eventually do. But I felt it was very generic.
It was saying that it's important to work with a reputable psychic when having your records read, because you're allowing them to delve into the deepest parts of who you are. So it's advised to pick one who has a loving spirit, is kind and caring, and has a good reputation. Now, it's believed that past life regressions can help resolve today's life challenges by releasing mental or physical pain, illness, stress, allergies, or fears. Discovering the past can manifest a clearer life flow in the here and now. The next approach I found was the psychological approach, and that refers to a practice where you are put in a hypnotic state by someone who will guide you to reveal information about your past life. The hypnotist will take you back from your current existence to your past one. Now, is this how Carol Bowman did things?
Yeah.
Many people who have witnessed past life regression have felt as if they were having an out-of-body experience. During a past life regression session, you might discover you have not only lived in another place and time, but you were also of a different gender and even spoke another language. I read with this that the method can also affect your memory, kind of like how EMDR therapy affects your memory.
Yeah.
And the next one I have is the DIY approach.
That's what I'm doing.
And that's through dream analysis.
No, I'm not doing it that way.
Well, I want to hear about yours when I get done talking about this one. Now, some people are convinced that your dreams hold the key to information about your past life. Says there's dreaming of a particular place you've never visited, having dreams with highly vivid detail, experiencing recurring symbolic imagery. All of these are believed to be a manifestation of your past life memories. Keeping a dream journal will help you document and analyze patterns in your dreams. Over time, personal meaning of the recurring symbolic imagery in your dreams will help you to analyze more efficiently. I want to stress personal meanings. There's published dream encyclopedias out there, you know, and they're going to tell you what they think something symbolizes, you know, but to most people, the color red can mean very different and sometimes contradictory things. And then when you branch that out into the entire contents, everybody's dream encyclopedia would be a unique writing.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the dream encyclopedias also take Freud. And
yeah.
Freud's beliefs. And
he was very symbolic.
Yeah. Everything was a symbol for Freud. But no, I'm doing
it. Usually dicks.
Bowls are vaginas. Pencils are dicks, you know. No, I'm doing it through, I just downloaded I thought it was an audiobook, honestly, when I downloaded it. And then I found out that, no, it was actually just a recording of the hypnotherapy session for past life regression.
So it's kind of like the hypnotics, but you can do it on your own.
Yeah. And so I did that last night for the first time. And it was interesting. It's not my first time to experience hypnotherapy. We actually have an aunt and uncle who happen to be who I talked to about this, who do hypnotherapy. And I was talking to our aunt. And so, I mean, I have been hypnotized a couple of times, apparently. But I don't know how much of it is... I don't know, because I don't ever feel like I've been hypnotized. Like, it feels like I'm just laying there listening.
Hypnotized, you wouldn't know.
Exactly. I guess that's part of it. But Neil, I didn't see any big images or feel like an out-of-body experience. No, they say you to do it a few times. You want to do it a few nights in a row before you, because you may not get anything for a few nights. But I did get the year 1302. That is one thing that I had very clear was 1302.
1302.
I don't know what was going on in the world in 1302. I did get the feeling of like long blonde hair, but then that was really all I got. I didn't. I wanted like a movie playing out like with the crystal balls. Like I said, I have found my rabbit hole, and I'm gonna go back into it. There's a lot more books that I want to read on this whole thing too. It's all really interesting to me. So
might we do a part three later?
We might, maybe after we do some actual regressions. Kind of get some more information on that. Be kind of fun to revisit.
I'd be willing to subject myself to the psychological torture of a past life regression. I mean, I've already done EMDR therapy, so I kind of know what to expect from memory relocation and things like that.
Yeah. And I know Chad said he's up for it, so could be fun. We might have to revisit this later. If you've got anything to add, if you have ever experienced a past life or you have children that have experienced past life memories, send us the stories. It'd be awesome to read. We might add that into our third part three later on. Who knows? But go ahead and email them to us or send us a message on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, any of those. We're live on all of them under UNP Normalcy. I post a lot on Facebook. I do a lot of the Instagram and Facebook. Chad does more of the Twitter stuff. Our email is umpnormalcy@gmail.com. And we look forward to being in your ear next week. We're going to start into our Halloween season coming up soon. We've actually kind of recorded out of order, and we have some of them. And I'm excited to let you guys hear what we've come up with. Because Halloween is my favorite time of the year. Just a little bit. But thank you for listening. And we will come at you next week. Until next time.
Keep digging.